Hi, and thank you for joining us today for Destigmatizing Urology, an official podcast series from Urology Times. As we all know, stereotypes and misleading information circulate within the field of urology, and these miscommunications can negatively affect doctor-patient counseling and decision-making. This series destigmatizes topics in urology alongside clinical experts to help listeners practice more efficiently and foster better relationships with their patients. I'm your host and Urology Times assistant editor, Janelle Hart. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Alexandra Rogers. She discusses the stigmas associated with overactive bladder and how urologists can take the burden off of primary care physicians to educate patients who have this condition. Rogers is a urologist who specializes in incontinence at Sansum Clinic in Santa Barbara, California. What are the stigmas associated with overactive bladder?
OAB, it's one huge stigma where women, they're shameful, they stay silent, they cope with it. Unlike other female conditions like vaginal atrophy, UTIs, wrinkles, hot flashes, breast health, it's something culturally where we're not having any conversation about it because there is so much stigma surrounding it. And ladies come in to see us and they say, oh, I didn't do my Kegels, or it's just part of aging. I should just wear these costly, polluting, uncomfortable pads and depends. This results in disabling anxiety, helplessness, and social isolation. But what's crazy is that, you know, FPMRS just created this article that you guys profiled last month, where 62% of women have urinary incontinence, and on some level, 53% have urge urinary incontinence between just pure urge incontinence versus mixed urinary incontinence. So it is staggering that over half of women have OAB or wet OAB, yet no one's making it to professionals to get help in the numbers that they need to actually move the needle. And I found when they actually finally come and see one of us, they just say, well, I have leakage, and they have no awareness about what the leakage is. So I'll say, you know, is it leakage because when you jump and you don't like that, or is it you pull your car into the driveway and you can't make it in time? Which one bothers you more? And literally they stare at me and say, well, the leakage. So we have such an enormous potential to improve just why are you leaking, and that it is very common, and that there are ways to get help, and it should not be so stigmatized at all. And you know, women beyond that, they may think, well, you know, someone put me on a medication years ago and it caused me dry mouth or constipation, or made me a little woozy, so I stopped taking it. And they think that's the only option. And now we have tons of other med choices and third line treatments and therapies on the horizon that we're excited about. So this current maze that women are in, it's full of roadblocks. And so we really need to educate women to get rid of the stigma. We need to involve PCPs so they know to bring these patients to us, to send them, and so that we make it normalized and give hope that there can be improvement, because we got to end this pill purgatory, and we need to improve the fact that 75% of these patients are untreated, unmanaged, and frustrated.
How do these stigmas impact the management of patients with this condition?
Yeah, so this dark, dirty, silent condition, they're not making it to incontinence specialists. So they're not getting to someone that can help them. So that hinders management just in itself. And then once they're even getting to us, you know, it's a very high attrition where patients drop off 84 to 90% by the fourth visit with us. There's only perhaps a 3% penetration of third lines, a little higher if you're really devoted to offering an OAB toolbox to patients. And the adherence with these can be very poor. So then we're back to bathroom mapping, where patients know every Starbucks on the 4-hour drive to come see us. They know how to order their incontinence products secretly on Amazon. They're wearing dark clothes. They're avoiding relations because a lot of ladies with overactive bladder leak during sex. So it really is a couple's disease. They're attempting to perform physical therapy on their own, even though perhaps no one's even taught them how to do a Kegel, nor even performed an exam. And they're restricting their fluids significantly, so that, you know, some of my most horrific stories ladies tell me is, you know, I was on a prop plane in Alaska and had to pee in a Yeti cooler because that was my only option. I'm wearing 3/4 length jackets like all the female politicians, so my bottom is covered. I've had to buy a new change of clothes at Target when I had an accident. And, you know, I think the pandemic really heightened some of this with bathrooms being closed. So I think some of that social isolation got a lot worse. But on the flip side, we also had a lot of weight gain, anxiety during the pandemic. So I think this condition is only going to go up in prevalence. And my patients, they want to start living again. They're getting vaccinated, boosted. They want to fly across the country to the wedding. They want to go out and shop. And they really need help now more than ever. And on a larger level, the impact of this, you know, it makes patients miss work, higher unemployment, more disability claims. We have that data. We spend more on these patients, anywhere from 1.5 to 2.5 times more in healthcare expenses, like $80 billion industry. And finally, it's an environmental crisis where landfills, we're surpassing baby diapers with adult incontinence products, which is frightening. So back to the question, how these stigmas impact the management of these patients, I think it hinders them from getting to us. And perhaps if we are not really open about this shared decision-making, marriage going forward and trying to get you better, they don't come back to us because they maybe only speak up once where, you know, half of patients won't say anything to their healthcare professional and only 44% of professionals are asking, right? So of course that stigma is inherently contributing to the management when most ladies on average wait 3 years to ever see a professional about this.
And so what would you say are some of the current and future innovations that are helping with that in this space?
We've certainly come a long way since 1975 when I think oxybutynin, ditropan was approved. We have added beta agonists to the toolbox that certainly have a safer profile as outlined by the OGS 2021 clinical consensus statement on cognitive risk and taking anticholinergics, and women over 70 shouldn't be prescribed these meds is a statement they made, that which is very powerful. In regards to third line, we still have a long way to go. You know, when we look at the data, we have a very high attrition, 90% fourth visit for the general urologist, general physician, 84% for even what was formerly called FPMRS, now urogynecologist. Those fellowship trained urologists, urogynecologists, they are extremely well-versed in what these are. They want to take care of their patients. So even when they explain these options, they're still having low penetration rates. So I think there's a lot of room for improvement, but I'm someone who there's not one size fits all with these therapies. We should be giving this menu, going through the toolbox, seeing what fits. So with our current treatments, and I think Urology Times partnered really nicely with Jason Kim and Jolly Kapoor in a recent article, really exciting data that they gave a 6-minute video to their patients on risk benefit of the different third lines. And what was shocking is that people said yes, you know, 38% said they were interested in Botox for its long-lasting effects, more the older age group over 65, which is what I see in my practice. PT&S, 37% said I'm interested in that because there's no surgery, no complications really, more the younger age, less than 64. And then sacral neuromodulation, 13% were interested because of long relief. So I find there's this disconnect where, as Jason Kim said, only 13% said I'm not interested in any of these yet. We have 75% untreated, 3% penetration for a lot of people. Obviously, people that are very devoted to this space can get that number to 16, 20, 25, 30, 40% on a good day for me. So you had 87% saying yes. So we need to work on where does this disconnect happen, the barriers to actually getting to that third line treatment. And we need to continue to refine the current therapies and expand the toolbox. So yeah, I think there's a lot of exciting stuff that's been mentioned on the horizon. I'm intrigued by Urovance Uro-902 gene therapy injection, which may have a different profile than Botox injections. I'm following saphenous transcutaneous home stimulation, knowing that we have strong TENS data coming out of more socialized countries for use, given its low cost. I'm excited about advances in primary cell sacral neuromodulation with nothing for a patient to charge. Axonics is close to that, which is very exciting. Just reducing patient device management is always going to be a good thing, in my opinion. I would kind of clean my bottom area for sacral neuromodulation of nothing to charge. I think that's a good thing if you're a sacral candidate. And then the various future tibial implant procedures, hopefully on the horizon, getting FDA approval sooner than later, where you would avoid surgery and for some of them avoid any patient device management and be very automatic. And, you know, I think women that suffer from this, you know, they really have their heyday pending, like UroLift for BPH, where we kind of somehow fill that gap that we clearly have in caring for these patients. I want to see the Bulkamid effect that I've seen been just taken off for stress urinary incontinence, where I got so many ladies to say yes to Bulkamid, where they were saying no to a mesh sling after reviewing that as an option, because it's understandable, it's low risk, it is quite effective, and it's low burden. So I'm hoping we can craft and cultivate more things in the OAB toolbox to get us to treatments like that.
And so you also touched on this before, but if you can expand on what the urologist's role is in destigmatizing urine leakage in women.
Yeah, we have to put ourselves out there to support the primary care doctors. You know, they're getting slayed by all of the pressure and constraints of COVID and telemedicine. So we need to be very vocal that we are staying on top of these advances. We are committed to offering all of these therapy options and just encourage them to screen for it, because we're never going to get anywhere if women aren't speaking up, they're not asking about it. So I think as much as we can do to green light the path of keep sending patients, we're trying to offer them everything, stay on top of this, but try and take the burden and load off of them. Because as we know, even with medications, you know, 80% will stop them at 1 year, whether it's intolerable side effects or cost prior authorization issues. And we need to take that access burden on our plate, because I think it's very hard for them to take that on with all laundry list of things they're trying to accomplish in a Medicare wellness visit. And I think for patients, we really need to normalize this, get the epidemiology out there that, oh, half of women have this. This is something I can talk about. This is somewhere I can get help. And just try and reduce that maze and increase awareness of therapy options. I mean, women walk into my office and they say, I didn't know there was Botox, or I didn't acupuncture. Well, I'm interested in that. Or, wow, there's a surgical pacemaker for my backside. Like, who knew, right? And there's safe meds that aren't drying that I couldn't tolerate. Well, I'm so glad, like, there's options, right? And people just have no clue. So I'm a big believer in OAB menus. On my website, Bladder Boutique, I send out a link to it like days before the visit so that I can encourage women to learn what their leakage is and start marinating on what they might be interested in with therapies for me. And I can't tell you how happy, since I've been doing that, I get so excited when they fill out their little intake form with me and they write down that they have overactive bladder. And I'm like, how do you know that term? That's so exciting, right? Like, because like 5 years ago, no one knew what they have. And so we're trying to chip away at that versus the leakage, right? Which they don't know where to go with that, with how to get better. So we need to lead the charge to improve access and reduce barriers and work together to get these patients to therapy.
Absolutely. And lastly, Dr. Rogers, is there anything else you feel our audience should know about this topic?
Yeah, I just think continue to talk openly about all the therapies, embrace novel technologies if you think they might fit into treating your patients, that hopefully will land soon. And, you know, we can really work together to expand choices for patients, given the astounding incidence, poor penetration. You know, I think we can take this mission and make it really possible together from where we've been in the past and, you know, fight the high attrition, the poor third line penetration and low adherence with therapies, and keep expanding the awareness, which improves self-diagnosis by patients, help them navigate to an incontinence specialist if the PCPs are struggling to do that with everything going on in medicine, you know, offer a robust toolbox and execute a higher penetration rate by giving a great menu that hopefully in the future, we just keep checking more boxes for patient needs as we're seeing in data coming out about what patients are looking for to sign up for something to help them. So it's a really exciting time. It's such a privilege to be a part of this space now versus where it was 5 years, 10 years. We have to get better, because if we don't, we're just going to have such an environmental issue with like all these pads being thrown in the garbage. So we really have no choice but to keep trying to improve and help our patients.
Be sure to subscribe to Destigmatizing Urology on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps. You can get the latest clinical perspectives and practice management advice by visiting www.urologytimes.com. Thank you for listening.